So the Parsha of Matos opens with the section dealing with Nedarim, the ability of a person to accept something as a Torah prohibition through force of a Neder, and by extension Shavuos. And the details of those mitzvahs are many. Each one has their own Masechta. There's Maseches Nedarim, Maseches Shavuos. But I'd like to focus actually on the way that Moshe introduces Parsha of Nedarim. And that is the very first Pasuk of Parshas Matos, Perek Lamed, Pasuk Beis. Once again, we are treated to the amaratzis of those who divided the chapters the way that they did. Vayomer Moshe b'nei Yisrael, at the end of Pinchas, is the concluding Pasuk of Parshas Pinchas, that Moshe told them everything that Hashem had said with regards to Korbanos. And Vayedaber Moshe is the beginning of a new section, should be Pasuk Aleph, but as we've seen many times, those that are in the printing business are not always in the thinking business, and it's not a Jewish division chapter in those ways. We know Parshat Shavua and the paragraphs in the Torah. The chapters per se, they're convenient, but they're not of Jewish origins. So as Rav Kupperman used to say, some goy had mazel, and he's found his way into the basically every Chumash and Tanakh. But in Pasuk Beis, the opening Pasuk, Vayedaber Moshe el Roshi Hamatos Livnei Yisrael Lemor. So Moshe speaks firstly to the heads of the tribes, but ultimately to all of Yisrael, and says, Zeh Hadavar Asher Tziva Hashem. This is the matter that Hashem has commanded, and for the next 15, 16 psukim, we will have some of the details of Nedarim and Shavuos. And let us take a look at Rashi's comment on the words Zeh Hadavar. To translate them is very easy. Zeh Hadavar, this is the word, this is the matter. And Rashi, quoting the Sifrei, Chazal and the Sifrei, has a very important comment to make here. Says Rashi, Moshe Nisnabe Beko Amar Hashem. Moshe prophesied, introduced his prophecies with Ko Amar Hashem, as indeed every Navi does. I hesitate to say your average Navi, because a Navi is an average, but the standard for Naviim is Ko Amar Hashem, so says Hashem. Kachatzos Halayla, for example, the famous prediction of Makos Bechoros, Ko Amar Hashem, Kachatzos Halayla. Va'Naviim Nisnabu B'Ko Amar Hashem. So too, Naviim also introduced their Nevuos with those three words, Ko Amar Hashem, so says Hashem. Then, says Rashi, Mosef Aleha Moshe, but then Moshe has an additional level. I mean, he has a signature that other Nevi'im do not have, and that is Shenisnabe Bilashon Zehadavar. Moshe can also is capable of prophesying and presenting his prophecies with the words Zehadavar, like we see here. Vayitabe Moshe Zehadavar. So clearly, there's a great deal at stake here between Ko Amar Hashem and Zeh Hadavar, except it's not immediately apparent what the difference between them is. After all, they seem to be roughly the same. Ko Amar Hashem, so says Hashem, Zeh Hadavar, this is a matter more or less identical. And as Meforshim point out, we should not say and should not understand that perhaps Ko Amar Hashem is more approximate, as opposed to Zeh Hadavar, which is more precise. We're used to the letter Kaf. It can mean Kaf Hadimyon, like, approximate, Kaf Hadimyon. If you say that something is Ko something, it's a plus minus, as they say. I think we've mentioned in the past, it's a good example. If you call for a taxi and they say they'll be there by Kachamesh Dakot, so that could mean anything. It's statistically, it's possible that it's 5 minutes, but that's just a random possibility. Kachamish Dakot means don't hold your breath. However, Ko does not mean that. Ko has a connotation of precision. We find, for example, in Moshe's opening speech, his preamble to Matan Torah, to the giving of the Torah, in Shmos Perek Yutes, Hashem says to Moshe, Kotomar lebeis Yaakov, Kotomar, say thus. And if you look at Rashi's comment on the words Kotomar, Rashi says, Keloshen hazeh, beseder hazeh. With these words, in this order, it's very specific, the word ko. Similarly, in the world of halacha, the word ko implies precision and demands precision. The mitzvah of Birchas Kohanim, of Duchening, and the Kohanim bless the people, it's a very set formula. It's introduced with the words ko, ko tevarachu, et b'nei Yisrael, and Parshas Noso. And those words are not negotiable, and they're not flexible. A Kohen cannot say, well, I get the gist of what Birchas Kohanim is, maybe I'll say it in my own words. I mean, there's a Kohen that will be looking for a new shul very rapidly. Because ko tevarachu means exactly so. And therefore, if ko means exactly so, and zeat avar means this is it, they sound like two ways of saying the same thing. What then is the difference between Zeh HaDavar and Ko Amar Hashem? And this is a question that is discussed, as you can appreciate, by many Mefarshim, and as a very interesting approach that is taken by a school of Mefarshim is that the words Zeh HaDavar relate to the unique Madrega of Moshe Rabbeinu. As we know, when it comes to Nevuah, there are certain rules that are generally hold for prophets, and then Moshe kind of comes into his own altogether. And this, of course, was expressed when Aaron and Miriam felt that Moshe did not realize that Moshe was a Navi in a league of his own. They thought that he was like them, and that's when HaKadosh Baruch Hu expresses all the differences between them. And one of the differences between them is that every other Navi, when he receives the Nevuah, he is not in a fully awake, conscious state. He'll either be asleep, or he will be put into some type of almost a trance. Moshe is the only Navi that can receive Nevuah while he's fully awake and conscious. And what is behind this difference? It seems perhaps somewhat arbitrary, awake, asleep. Why should that be of the essence? Well, Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato in the Sefer Derech Hashem explains that, as we can appreciate, Nevuah, the spiritual medium of Nevuah, is projected and received by the spiritual faculties of the Navi. And every Jew has the spiritual faculty, ultimately every human being has, and it's the Nefesh, it's the spiritual faculties of the Navi that receive the Nevuah. However, it's the nature of things that the spiritual faculties of a person are somewhat held down and restricted as long as they're connected to the physical faculties. And they are connected, and it's a good thing that they're connected. But as long as they're connected, they're in a sense invested and restricted and not fully capable of acting with the capacity that could receive Nevuah. It's for that reason that in order to free, so to speak, the nefesh, the cognitive and spiritual faculties of the Navi, he needs to be asleep. What happens in sleep? Well, the Gemara puts in a very tersely, the Gemara states that sleep is 1/60th of death. And what that means is that within certain parameters, the connection when a person is sleeping between the body and the soul is somewhat loosened. That's why every morning we say Shechezarta b'nishmasi. From a certain point of view, elements of the neshama, or the connection between the neshama and the guf, is loosened when the Navi is sleeping, when a person is sleeping, and in that state the spiritual faculties of the Navi are finally free. They're liberated from any restricting aspects of the guf, and he's finally able to receive Nevuah. This is why Moshe was different, because the Madrega of Moshe was such that he was able to have his neshama fully potent, fully capable of receiving Nevuah, even while it was, yes, connected to the guf. which means even when he was awake, there was no impediment and there was no inhibition of the connection between body and soul for his neshama to receive nevuah. That's what's behind receiving nevuah awake as opposed to asleep. The question is, how does that now translate into Ko'amar Hashem versus Zeh HaDavar? Well, we know that one of the connotations of the word Zeh, and Zeh is a motif word, and it appears numerous times in the Torah, it always has the connotation of being in the presence of that thing. It's true for mitzvahs, as we know on Seder night. The mitzvah of Haggadah, Ba'avur Zeh. Ba'avur Zeh, Osa Hashem Li, B'tzeisi B'mitzrayim. And as the Haggadah says, Ba'avur Zeh, Amarti, Ele B'shar Sheish Matzah, Umoror, Munochen Nefanecha. You need to be in the presence of those items in order to tell the story of the Haggadah. Or HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem, with regards to Rosh Chodesh, Rashi tells us Hashem showed Moshe what the moon would look like. Zeh means that you can point to that thing, you're in the presence of that thing. And therefore, the reason why Zeh HaDavar, as opposed to Ko'amar Hashem, expresses the difference between Moshe on the one hand and Arv Nevi'im on the other hand, is that for every Navi, when he gave over the Nevuah, he was never in the presence of the word of Hashem. Because by definition, when he was receiving the word of Hashem, he was incapable of communicating it, of transmitting it. By the time he wakes up and now comes to communicate, but then he's no longer receiving. So he's not in the presence of the word of Hashem as he's telling it over. What Moshe Rabbeinu is capable of doing is receiving and transmitting simultaneously. He is the only one who can talk to you about what Hashem is saying while Hashem is saying it, which means as he's talking, he's in the presence of Hashem's word. And that is called Zeh HaDavar. Very interesting. There is a most curious question that is raised by one of the great Mefarshei Rashi. That the Perush Tzeda LaDerech, Rashi we know as many Perushim, one of the classics from the Acharonim is the Sefer Tzeda LaDerech by Rabbi Yisachar Ber Eilenberg. And his question, well, we'll see very quickly, he's a commentary on Rashi, so his question is on Rashi, but his question isn't really on Rashi, because every word that Rashi writes that we quoted is actually Rashi himself quoting from Chazal in the Sifrei. But the question of the Tzeda LaDerech is, if you wish to tell me that when Moshe uses the word Zeh HaDavar, it reflects the unique Madrega of Moshe, why did you wait so late in the Torah in order to make this comment? I mean, we're almost breaking up for the summer. It's the end of Parshat Chumash Bamidbar. Have we never seen Zeh HaDavar before? It happens to be that we have. At least two examples come to mind. Almost immediately having left Mitzrayim, Moshe is communicating with Zeh HaDavar. When Bnei Yisrael, they see the man, they're not sure what to do, Moshe gives them a message, Zeh HaDavar asher tziva Hashem, liktumi menu omer legulgoles. You should collect an omer for each person. Zeh HaDavar, almost from day one, that's a month out of leaving Mitzrayim. That's in Parshas Beshalach. Later on, in Parshas Shmini, in Chumash Vayikra, On the Yom HaShmini, on the opening day, the inaugural day of the Mishkan, there are special korbanos to be brought. Moshe introduces them with the words, Zeh HaDavar. By Yom Moshe al Bnei Yisrael, Zeh HaDavar Shetziva Hashem, V'yira Elechem Kavod Hashem. So we've had Zeh HaDavars in the past. We know that the principle within Chazal is that if they wish to adduce proof for something, or evidence for something, or point of discussion, they will do so from the earliest possible opportunity, relevant or appropriate opportunity within the Torah. So our question very simply is, if Zeh HaDavar is such an important phrase, and we've had Zeh HaDavars before, how come no one said anything until this late in the Chumash? That's a very interesting shaila. And the Tzeda LaDerech himself remains Bitzarach Iyun. He raises the question, he doesn't answer it. Which means that with trepidation and reservations, we now step in to perhaps try and suggest an answer to this question of Tzeda LaDerech. I believe that perhaps the matter is as follows. The word Davar, Zeh HaDavar, What is the meaning of the word davar? The word davar has two meanings, can have two meanings. And conveniently for us, the word davar has two meanings in Lashon HaKodesh, and they are reflected, lahavdil, in two meanings in English. For the word davar can either mean a word, davar, a word, or the word davar can mean a matter, davar, hadavar hazeh. And similarly, a matter in the sense that one can speak in a sense, and it's about the word or it's about the matter itself. Well, if that's true, and it is, then I think we'll appreciate that seeing within Zeh HaDavar the unique level of Moshe Rabbeinu as a Navi is only possible if you translate the word Davar as word, because then it's about Hashem's word. I think it all goes away if you translate it as matter. This is the matter that Hashem said. It's not about the word. In other words, there's the, shall we say, the medium and the message. If davar is about the medium, it's about Hashem's words, and Moshe is talking about Hashem's words, that's only Moshe can do. But if it's about the matter that Hashem has commanded, anyone can talk about the matter. You don't have the connotation of the uniqueness of Moshe Rabbeinu. And therefore, I think that there's a difference between the Zeh HaDavar that we meet in this week's Parsha and the Zeh HaDavars that we've met already. Namely, the Zeh HaDavars that we've met already are each one matter, one message, one thing, one topic. For example, to go back to the, so that we're clear, the first case of Zeh HaDavar we said is in with regards to the man. But it was one thing, it was one matter. This is the matter that Hashem has said, everybody should take an Omer. That's one matter. And therefore, you don't yet see that the uniqueness of Moshe, that it's about the level of prophecy. It's not necessarily about the level of prophecy. He said Davar because there's only one Davar to say. It's not about the Davar, the way that Hashem spoke to him. It's about the matter that Hashem gave him that he's now giving over. Similarly, on the Yom HaShmini, when there's special korbanos, that's one matter. In other words, there's something special for today, it's the following matter, these korbanos. And therefore, Zeh HaDavar doesn't yet shine with the uniqueness of Moshe as long as it's about the matter. That pertains to those earlier cases, but it's impossible to say that here. And the reason why it's impossible to say that in our case of Zeh HaDavar is because there is no way that you can talk about the beginning of Parshas Matos as one matter. You cannot go for 16 psukim with all the details and all the scenarios and all the cases and all the sub-laws and say that's one matter. I mean, that's an entire Parsha. And in fact, this is borne out by the words with which the Torah concludes this Parsha. It begins in Pasuk Beis, it ends in Pasuk Yud Zayin. And what does Pasuk Yud Zayin state of Perek Lamed Aleph? Eile HaChukim Asher Tziva Hashem Es Moshe Ben Ish Leishto Ben Av Lebito, etc. Eile HaChukim, the concluding Pasuk, the Pasuk of summation, refers to the contents of this Parsha in the plural. It's Chukim. This is not one thing. These are numerous things. But if they're numerous things, how then can Moshe introduce all of these things with the word Zeh HaDavar, which implies one thing? The answer is, we finally found a case where the word Zeh HaDavar doesn't refer to a matter, because there's more than one matter here, but it refers to the medium of speech through which Hashem is communicating with him. And only Moshe can talk that way, because only Moshe is in the presence of that word as he's giving it over. And this is why Chazal waited until this point. I think perhaps that is a suggestion worthy of proposing for the answer of the Tzedel HaDerech. In a sense, we've answered the question on Rashi, we've answered the question on Chazal and the Sifrei. The only question that remains, which I'm not sure how to phrase it, is that the Torah itself, perhaps we may ask, if indeed the Torah only gave us to understand that the uniqueness of Moshe at this stage, why did the Torah wait so long? We know why everybody else waited. Everybody else waited because the Torah waited. But why did the Torah wait? That until further notice is an imponderable for us, but at least the Rashi we understand. And moreover, not only do I think this is a worthy suggestion, I think it will help us explain something else which is also part of an important discussion. We've said, and it's worthwhile spending in a few moments on this, we've said that every Navi introduces with the words Ko Amar Hashem. That's standard. Moshe can also do that. Not Ko Amar Hashem, Kachatzos HaLaila. But then Moshe has his own special signature, Zeh HaDavar. Why does Moshe have his own special introduction? Because Moshe is a special Navi. The Kam Yisrael, Navi Od Ko Moshe. So then the Balabatisha question is, well, if Moshe is unique, so then why is he ever like the other Nevi'im? Why does he ever use Ko Amar Hashem? I mean, he's always Moshe. So it should be Zeh HaDavar consistently. But we find that it's sometimes yes, sometimes no. Sometimes he's Ko Amar Hashem, but that sounds like he's like the other Nevi'im, which we know that he's not. So why does he ever have that common ground with them? That's an interesting Shaila. And that question is raised by the Maharal in the Gur Aryeh. And the Maharal gives a very foundational answer. And his answer is, where do we find Moshe introducing with the word Ko? Well, we survey the Torah till now. Rashi gave us one example, when he's in Mitzrayim, he's talking about Makas Becheros, Ko Amar Hashem, Kachatzos HaLaila. Another example of Moshe using Ko Amar Hashem is at the time of the Chet HaEgel. When he came down, people were involved in the Egel. Moshe, B'nai Levi come to him, Mila Hashem Elai, B'nai Levi come to him, and Moshe says, Vayeva Moshe, Ko Amar Hashem, Ivu Voshuvu Mishar Lashar. So says Hashem, you need to deal with those that were directly involved in the Chet HaEgel, which they did, and 3,000 people were killed on that day. The question is, what then determines the type of thing, or the time, or situation that Moshe would say Ko Amar Hashem versus Zeh HaDavar? The Maharal says something very simple. And that is, it depends on the content of the Nevuah. What does a Navi talk about? What's your standard Nevuah? It's an interesting Shaila. It's possible to say, in terms of characterizing the different types of Nevuah, it's either something that Hashem will do at a certain time, or the way that things will be at a certain time, or it's something that Hashem wants people to do at a certain time. I mean, at the risk of oversimplifying, that's Nevi'im. The Navi comes with a message for the people, either about something for them at their time, or something that will happen at a future time. And because that is the norm for Nevuah, that is introduced with the normal introduction of Ko Amar Hashem. And in that respect, Moshe is no different. As if to say, Moshe also had his times when he was talking about things that would happen in a specific situation. For example, Makas Becheros. Makas Becheros is as surely as Lahavdil, but only with reservations. The Navi Yeshayah will come to Chizkiah and tell him that Sancheriv will be smitten. So Moshe comes to Paro and tells him that the first will be smitten. I mean, he's a Navi, acting as a Navi. But of course, Moshe has something that no other Navi has, and no other Navi can have. And that is, Moshe gave us Tariag Mitzvahs, 613 Mitzvahs. 613 Mitzvahs are not specific things for specific times. They are mitzvahs for all times. That's what characterizes one of the Tariag mitzvahs. And therefore, says Maharal, Zeh HaDavar, don't be surprised if you find Moshe also using Ko Amar Hashem, like other Nevi'im, because when the content of his Nevuah is like the content of other Nevi'im, he'll introduce in the same way. The unique Madrega of the Nevuah of Moshe is vouchsafed and reserved for Tariag Mitzvahs. And therefore, when he introduces a mitzvah, that's Zeh HaDavar, like in the beginning of our parsha, Zeh HaDavar, one of Tariag Mitzvahs. But in the other cases, Moshe will use Ko Amar Hashem. For example, Makos Bechoros, like we said, is specifically for that time. It's not one of the Taryag mitzvahs. And moreover, says Maharal, even the case which is a bit more delicate, where Moshe tells the tribe of Levi that they have to execute those that were involved in the Chet HaEgel, that's one of the Taryag mitzvahs, because it's one of the 630 mitzvahs is to deal with people that violated Avodah Zarah. But nonetheless, says Maharal, yes, it's true, but Moshe here isn't presenting the mitzvah. He is presenting an application of the mitzvah for this time. And therefore, the mitzvah's already been presented. That's a Zehadavar matter, but this now is Ko'amar Hashem. And that's why, even though it's one of the Taryag mitzvahs, if the issue at hand is applying it to this specific case, even that's called Ko'amar Hashem. So says Maharal. The problem is, the words of the Maharal have ended there. And we have a question. Namely, if Maharal says the division generally between Ko'amar Hashem and Zeh HaDavar is it Taryag mitzvahs or other, and other gets Ko'amar Hashem and only Taryag mitzvahs get Zeh HaDavar, let's go back to the earlier two Zeh HaDavars, and we'll see that they're not Taryag mitzvahs. I mean, they're mitzvahs, but they're not Taryag mitzvahs. They're not for all time. When Moshe tells Bnei Yisrael to collect an omer of man, that's not one of the 613 mitzvahs. That's not a mitzvah for all time. It's a mitzvah l'sha'ah. And when Moshe speaks about the special korbanos for the Yom HaShmini, that's not one of the 613 mitzvahs, because they'll never apply again, those korbanos. It's a mitzvah l'sha'ah. And therefore, our question is, if according to the Ramban, the Maharal, Zeh HaDavar always indicates one of the 613 mitzvahs, well, how do you deal with the two Zeh HaDavars that aren't dealing with the 613 mitzvahs? That's the question I had with regards to the Maharal. And Maharal doesn't talk about it, doesn't mention it at all. But I believe, perhaps, based on our understanding, that those earlier Zeh HaDavars, they're not the same as this final Zeh HaDavar, because they're not about the Nevuah of Moshe. There the word Davar doesn't mean word, it means matter. And because it means matter, it doesn't reflect the unique Madrega of Moshe, and therefore it's possible to use it, even though it's not talking about one of the 613 mitzvahs. So, as we see, there's quite a bit to say. Moshe almost hasn't said anything yet, and there's already a major discussion as to the way he introduces Zeh HaDavar. As we can appreciate, there's a great deal more to say, but in the meanwhile, let's move on a little bit further into Parshas Matos. After this section of Nedarim, which is Perek Lamed Aleph, then we have Perek Lamed Aleph, which is the war with Midian. And let us see how that's introduced. Perek Lamed Aleph Pasuk Avayedaber Hashem Moshe Limor Nekom Nikmas Bnei Yisrael Me'es HaMidyanim. Exact vengeance of Bnei Yisrael from the Midyanim. Achar Tiaseh Pelamecha. And after that you will be gathered unto your people. After that Moshe will pass away. Vayedaber Moshe El Ha'am Limor. And Moshe speaks to the people and says, Pasuk Gimel, Hechatzume Etchem Anoshim Latzava, activate people for the army, V'yu Alamidyan Laseis Nikmas Hashem B'Midyan. So Hashem told Moshe to relay the message, and Moshe relays the message. Rashi comments on Pasuk Gimel. V'yidaber Moshe, and there's a point here to appreciate with regards to Moshe Rabbeinu. Afal pi sheshoma Shemisoso Tuluya Badavar, even though Moshe, he heard very clearly that his passing is connected and is contingent upon doing this. As soon as this happens, then he'll pass away. One could have imagined perhaps that Moshe would delay, or he's time stamped in that way. Also besimcha velo echer. But we see that Moshe acted with joy, with alacrity, and he did not in any way delay, even though he knows that what's at stake. Interestingly, and again the Tzedel HaDerech raises the question, how do we see that Moshe acted with joy? Or we see that Moshe acted. We don't know how he acted. He was told to tell them to go to war. And he told them, but we don't know in what mood or under what circumstances. But Rashi says he did so besimcha. How do we see that? Well, says Tzedek LaDerech, we should notice two things in the pasuk. Number one, the verb Moshe uses is heichaltzu. Heichaltzu, chalutzim. The word chalutz always has the connotation of something that is done with energy and with initiative. And therefore, if Moshe, of all the ways for Moshe to tell them to go to war, but he tells them to energize themselves and activate themselves, heichaltzu me'itchem, that means Moshe was prepared for this to happen very quickly. He wasn't looking to delay it at all. Secondly, as many Meforshim point out, we should note that there is actually a shift of the way that the war is referred to between when Hashem speaks to Moshe and when Moshe speaks to Bnei Yisrael. When Hashem speaks to Moshe, he says, Nekom nikmas Bnei Yisrael me'es hamidyonim, exact vengeance on behalf of Bnei Yisrael. When Moshe speaks to Bnei Yisrael, he says to them, Laseis, at the end of Pasuk Gimel, Laseis nikmas Hashem b'midyan, to exact vengeance on behalf of Hashem. Why does Moshe change the war from being referred to as Nikmas Bnei Yisrael, as it was to him, and calls it Nikmas Hashem? Says Tzedek LaDerech, here again we see Moshe not looking for any cause of delay in the war. After all, if the war is characterized as Nikmas Bnei Yisrael, it's to avenge Bnei Yisrael, then from a certain point of view, one could understand that Bnei Yisrael can decide when they'll do it. If it's for their benefit and for their honor, so then they'll decide, and perhaps they'll be willing to be a bit more flexible, especially as they know that after this war, that's the passing of Moshe Rabbeinu. In order to forestall or to circumvent any such thoughts on the part of Bnei Yisrael, Moshe phrases the war as Nikmas Hashem. It's the vengeance of Hashem. No one has any maneuverability with that. No one has any leeway. No one has any say in that matter. You hear Nikmas Hashem, you go straight away, because Moshe didn't want them to delay on his behalf in that way. And all of these nuances in the pasuk are behind Rashi's comment, Asa b'simcha velo echer. But there's a very beautiful comment, just looking later on Pasuk Hey. For the Pasuk says, Vayimasru me'alfei Yisrael, and they were handed over from the thousands of Yisrael, Elef Lamate, 1,000 for each tribe, Shnei Masar Elef Chalutzei Tzava. Vayimasru me'Yisrael. Well, after all that was said, Vayimasru means they were handed over. And Rashi comments on the fact that the word is said in the nifal, in the passive. It sounds like no one really wanted to volunteer until they were handed over. What's behind that? This is what Moshe was looking to avoid, but it happened anyway. People did want to delay. And let's read the words of Rashi very carefully. It's a wonderful Rashi. Like all the others. Vayimasru, says Rashi, lo diacha shvachan shel roe Yisrael. This teaches you the praise of the shepherds of Yisrael, of the leaders of Yisrael. Kamehim chavivim o Yisrael. How beloved they are to Yisrael. How do we see this? Consider, ad shelo shamu b'misaso, until they heard, prior to them hearing about that Moshe would be passing away, mahu omer, what does it say? Those famous words of Moshe, any more and they'll stone me. That's earlier. But umisheshamu shemisas Moshe teluy benikmas midyan. But when they heard and they did hear that Moshe's passing would be a result of the war with Midian, lo rotzu laleches. They didn't want to go. How can they go? How can they move forward if they are precipitating the passing of Moshe Rabbeinu? And that's why they had to be forced to go. Passive. No one wanted to volunteer to wage the war that would lead to the death of Moshe. That's chibason shel Moshe. And the Ksav Sofer, the son of the Chasam Sofer, the Ksav Sofer, his son and successor in Pressburg there, asks a couple of very interesting questions. Firstly, again, if we're exacting with the terminology, we see two adjectives. Lodia shivachon, shavroi Yisrael. It teaches you the praise of the shepherds of Israel, of the leaders of Israel. Kamehim chavivin al Yisrael, how beloved they are. The question is, what's the difference between shivachon and chavivin? Are they the same? Seemingly, what we see here is lodia chavivason shel roi Yisrael. You see how beloved they are; they didn't want to go. Shivachon is something else. Of course, they're connected. In other words, presumably they're beloved because they're praiseworthy. But nonetheless, Rashi seems to be bringing two factors here into his comment. That's number one. And number two, says Ksav Sofer, what do we see in terms of how beloved Moshe is? For the most part, we see that he's not appreciated from the sources that Rashi quotes. In other words, Rashi says, apparently, for the whole time until the point where they heard that Moshe was going to die, they were one step away from stoning him. In his words, Od Matus Kaluni, when they heard that he was going to die, so then they didn't want to bring that about. So that means for almost all of the time, Moshe was not beloved, not in that way. So really, when you think about it, in terms of the sources that you're bringing to corroborate what you're saying, you're stating that the leaders of Israel are chavivin, but then the psukim that you bring indicate that they're almost never chavivin until the very end when they're chavivin. But that doesn't sound like it's an ongoing thing. In fact, for the most part, it seems exactly the opposite. These are the interesting questions of the Ksav Sofer, and he gives a fascinating answer. And one can see, if one may say, one can see the, from a manhig of Yisrael, he can certainly appreciate the words of Rashi that he's talking about. It's often true that a leader will take care of his people. But you never really know if the leader cares about the people. Because as their leader, it could be that he cares about himself, except who is he if his people aren't successful and thriving? That means, for example, Sapsofer gives an example. If a city within the kingdom is attacked, the king will marshal the forces to defend the city. Out of what? Motivated from what? Does he care about everyone in the city, or does he care about his kingdom? He doesn't want his kingdom to be decimated or overrun. So you never really know as to whether the king acts for the benefit of his subjects or the benefit of his kingdom, the monarchy, that is to say. How can you know? Well, the only way you would ever find out is if the king made a decision that was for the benefit of his subjects, but was not for his own benefit, was contrary to his own interests. And then the two finally part ways, and you can see if the king actually really cares about the people. But that will almost never be the case, because the two are invariably intertwined, one with the other. But this is the background to the appreciation, or perhaps the lack thereof, the lack of full appreciation of Moshe on the part of Bnei Yisrael. They saw him as a leader, but as it always is the case with leaders, does he care about the Jewish people? Does he perhaps care about his people? Because he's their leader, and in the end, that's what it's all about. Which means they never really gave him the full credit for being a devoted leader for them. But everything came out on this occasion, because this is the one time when actually acting in the interest of Bnei Yisrael is contrary to the personal interest of Moshe, because when he sends them to war, he is precipitating his own demise. No one had ever seen anything like that before. And from a certain point of view, this was a revelation for the part, for Bnei Yisrael, really about all the 40 years. Because for most of the time, they were somewhat suspect, maybe, of Moshe, the leader. Who knows what motivates the leader? But when they finally, at this occasion, it was almost a retroactive revelation with regards to the entire 40 years. And moreover, this reveals to us two things. Number one, Shevocho Shel Moshe, the praise of Moshe. How is it the praise of Moshe? It says Ksav Sofer, very simply, when a person can only go so far unappreciated before he stops doing the things that are not appreciated. I mean, that's Derech HaOlam. You help someone, a gesture, once, twice, they throw it back in your face, they're suspicious of you, and they're, at a certain point, as they say in the modern Hebrew, lo rotze, you don't want. This, which means that in a sense there's something about Moshe that came out here. Moshe goes for almost 40 years unappreciated by Bnei Yisrael, but his dedication to them never wavers. Because at this final event, we see that it is 100% intact. One could have imagined, and perhaps even understood, that Moshe's goodwill towards Bnei Yisrael and his dedication towards Bnei Yisrael had been worn away by 39 years of them constantly suspecting him, of not even really caring about them. At a certain point, so you could say, okay, so maybe you don't deserve that I should care about you. But it's at the end of 40 years, and here's Moshe still acting actively on their behalf against his own interests. That's number one. Shevachon Shel Roi Yisrael. That's his praise. And in a sense, that led to Chibason in the eyes of Bnei Yisrael. They realized that they had underappreciated him all these years. But now the full Chiba came out. So it's very, very beautiful words of the Ksav Sofer with regards to the launch of that war of Midian. Now, I'd like to conclude by taking a look at the section of Bnei Gad of Bnei Reuven, which is at the end of the Parsha. And it's a very lengthy section, there's many details, but we'll perhaps restrict ourselves to some general comments. And let us see once again through the Psukim. So this is in Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Aleph. U'mikne Rav, Hayal of Bnei Reuven of Bnei Gad, Atzum Ma'od. They had a great deal of cattle, apparently more than everyone else. Vayu'as Eretz Yazer, and the background, of course, is that there are certain sections on the east side of the Yarden, the territory of Og and of Sichon, that have been conquered, which then lay seemingly available, and they decided that's where they wanted to be. That's Eretz Yazer, Eretz Gilad, Vinei Makom, Makom Mikne. It was a fertile place, they had a lot of cattle, and so they approached Moshe. Vayavo Bnei Gad Bnei Reuven. Vayomu el Moshe vel Elazar haKohen vel Nesiyah haEdelemor. So they say the following to the leaders: Ataros vedivon viAzer veNimra veCheshbon veLelev uSavam uNevo uVaOn. These number of cities: Haaretz haShehika Hashem lefnei Adas Yisrael, the land that Hashem smote before Yisrael. Eretz Miknehi. It's a fertile land. VeLavadecha Mikne, and we have cattle. And that's that. Then they begin their pitch for staying there on the Eiver Hayard. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh is very interested in Pasuk Dalet, the way that they refer to these territories. Because they seem to be describing these territories to Moshe. Moshe knows full well the history of these territories. Moshe was the one who was involved in the war to get them. So he knows what they are, he knows what happened with them. But they nonetheless describe them. Pasuk Dalet, Haaretz Ashehika Hashem Lefnei Adas Yisrael, the land that Hashem smote before Yisrael. That's a very specific way of portraying them. And why do they talk about them in that way? And the Arachaim HaKadosh says that there are actually two points here. And it's interesting that there are really, one could say, two points of objection for Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven staying there on the east side. One of them is dealt with by Moshe, interestingly, and the other one isn't. Namely, number one, as far as we know, those places on the east side of the Yarden, so they're on the wrong side of the Yarden, and they're not in Eretz Canaan. So that's not acceptable, seemingly, because the Bnei Yisrael are meant to be in Eretz Kanaan, not outside. It's Stamapella that a group of Jews chose to locate specifically on the east side. I think that's a last. But whatever happened to Yishuv Eretz Yisrael? That's number one. Number two, as far as we know, they seem to be not interested in participating, not only not living in Eretz Yisrael, but not participating in the wars that will be involved in Eretz Canaan. Until Moshe says, well, that's not acceptable, and they say, no, we'll go first, but they hasten, in a sense, to make amends. But it's seemingly, because they don't mention it, in their opening pitch to Moshe, they don't seem to be offering to go to war. Perhaps it seems like they weren't planning on going to war. How could this be? Says the Rachaim HaKadosh, it's really with these words, Ha'aretz, from Pasuk Dalet, Ha'aretz Asher Hika Hashem Lefnei Adas Yisrael, that Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven are looking to address these points. We should know, Eretz Yisrael has an interesting quality to it, and that is, it's possible to expand it beyond its original borders. This is something that one cannot really talk about that much nowadays, but it happens to be true. And that exists a possibility, and indeed we find that it was done at a certain time. David HaMelech, he conquered certain parts of Syria. Interestingly, so it seems that what Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven are suggesting, and apparently this was true, because Moshe doesn't take them to task over the issue of Eretz Yisrael. It goes undiscussed. Apparently what they're saying is, it should be possible to look upon the east side of the Yarden as an expansion of it. It was conquered within the course of getting into Eretz Yisrael, as an extended part of Eretz Yisrael. There's just one problem. And that is, as far as we know, it is only ever possible to expand Eretz Yisrael if you have the actual Eretz Yisrael. If you have the thing, the land itself, then one can work outwards. But no one's in Eretz Canaan yet. So how are they looking, in a sense, almost to preemptively give it the status of expanded Eretz Yisrael when they're not even in Eretz Yisrael itself? That's never been done. To this, Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven say, here it's different, because Hashem conquered these lands. Ha'aretz asher hikra Hashem. And therefore, what they're suggesting is, and apparently again, this aspect was accepted, what they're suggesting is that because Hashem conquered these lands, He is the one that has expanded Eretz Yisrael, and from that point of view, it should be acceptable to stay here. That's number one. Number two, what about the war? So here, Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven say something, and that is not accepted, and they are corrected on this point, because their perspective is that, you know, we'd be prepared to be involved in the war, but apparently we don't need to be involved in the war, because our experience and the way that land has been conquered so far is that God did it. Hashem basically did it. I mean, the people couldn't do that. The way that He weighed devastated all of those armies that are against us, so He doesn't need us. And that they mean when they say Ha'aretz Hashahik Hashem Lefnei Adas Yisrael, Hashem is conquering the land, so He's doing quite well without us, and we'll be here. And that's not accepted. And the reason why it's not accepted is because, in a sense, everything is like that. Whatever Hashem does for people is in conjunction with their own participation. That's what we call hishtadlus. And therefore, what Moshe is saying is, it's not correct to say that, well, Hashem is capable of anything, so He can conquer the land, so why should I be there? No, He will bless your efforts, but you've got to be there. And therefore, it's not acceptable for these two tribes not to be involved in those wars. That was a misunderstanding of their part as to how exactly the land will be conquered. But here, something interesting happens. We'll see a bit of a pendulum swing here on their part. Because when they hear that Moshe says, how can it be, you won't go to war, they recalibrate their suggestion. And what do they say? Pasuk Tet Zayin. Vayikshu elav, vayomru, gidro sonif limiknenu po, va'armunita peinu. That's a separate question which we've discussed on many occasions. They put their livestock before their children. Moshe says that's also not acceptable. So they say, okay. Well, that's what they say here. Moshe corrects them. But then they say in Pasuk Yud Zayin, Va'anachnu nechaleitz chushim, we'll go first. We're fully prepared. We didn't realize we were needed. Now that you say that we're needed, we're prepared to go first. Nechaleitz chushim lifnei b'nei Yisrael ad ashev yanum el mekom, until we bring them to their place. 100%. Is that acceptable? Everything's okay now? Interestingly, if we look at their words, it says the Rahim HaKadosh, even as they offer to do this, there's something amiss. Namely, there's no mention of Hashem's name in this pasuk. As soon as they're told that they need to be involved in the war, they express that they're fully prepared to be involved in the war, but then there's no mention of Hashem. And what's the point? The point is that this is the pendulum swing, in the sense that they still abide by their original principle. If Hashem is there, he doesn't need us. And Moshe says, well, you're not going to go to the war? You've got to go to war. So they still remain by their original paradigm. If the paradigm states, if Hashem is there, he doesn't need us, then the other side of the coin is, so if he does need us, so then he won't be there. Apparently he wants us to do it. We're prepared to do it. But they still didn't see the synthesis. They still didn't see the harmonization of the fact that them and Hashem are there together. But rather they said, oh, we misunderstood. We thought Hashem would do the war. But you're telling us we will do the war. Fine, so we'll do the war. Because well, apparently Hashem is not going to be there. And the way that they offer, we'll go before Bnei Yisrael, ad asher im havyonum el mekamam, until we bring them to their place. They saw themselves as being the exclusive ones who would be doing this. That's also not acceptable. And thus we find Moshe ostensibly restates their offer, but it's not a restatement. It's a modification. It's an adjustment, a correction. In Pasuk Kaf, it says, "Vayomar aleihem Moshe, im tasunas hadavar hazeh, if you will do the following, im techatzu lifnei Hashem lamilchama, if you go before Hashem in the war." This was in a sense, the paradigm shift for Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven. Originally they thought Hashem and not them. Subsequently they thought them and not Hashem. And Moshe says both times, you're on the wrong side of each time. Because the answer is that synthesis. You'll be there, but you're not going before Bnei Yisrael. You're going before Hashem, the Milchama. And ultimately, at least in terms of that discussion, this point was accepted by Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven. They accepted the correction because they again restate. I mean, that's why the parsha is so long. Everyone's restating and restating, but it's really fine-tuning. Because these details are exceedingly important, and therefore in Pasuk Kafhei they accept. We will do like you're commanding. Our families will be there on the east side. And we will pass, go forward before Hashem, as you are saying. And it's very interesting, as certain Mefarshim point out, there's two verbs here. Again, we pay attention to these details and these dimensions come out. In the end of Pasuk Kafhei, they say, Avadecha Yasu Kasher Aduni Mitzaveh. We will do as you command. In the end of Pasuk Kavzayin, it says, Kasher Aduni Dover, as you are saying. What's the difference between Kasher Aduni Mitzaveh and Kasher Aduni Dover? But in terms of what the Rahim HaKadosh is saying, there's really two issues here. Number one, what is demanded of them? And number two, how do you talk about it? because it's possible for them to accept Moshe and go to war and still miss the point, because they think if we're going to war, so it's before Bnei Yisrael, it's not before Hashem. And therefore, at this point, Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven accept two things. Number one, they accept the terms of Moshe, that you said that we need to go to be involved in the war. We will do that. That's kasher, the mitzaveh, what you're commanding us to do. But it's not enough, because if they do what Moshe commands them to do, but completely miss the point, that's also not acceptable. And therefore they say, we didn't miss the point. We've got the point. That's Pasuk Kav Zayin. Ta'avadecha yavru kol chalus tzava lefnei Hashem la'melchama. We got that. We heard that. That when we go to war, it's before Hashem. Kasher Adoni dover, as you put it, as you said, that was heard. So these are some of the very interesting comments, discussions with regards to Bnei Gad Bnei Reuven, and it remains that Yisod that is true for all time in that respect. The synthesis and the harmonization of what we do and what Hashem does, it's a very binary and superficial approach to see them as they never really coexist. When you have one, you don't have the other, and vice versa. When it's me, so I'm taking care of it. When I finish taking care of it, then I give it to Hashem. But there's no, the two don't live side by side. And really the enduring message from Moshe Rabbeinu in this week's Parsha is that the two do live side by side. Whatever a person does, he needs to do. But that's something that he's doing. Lefnei Hashem, we'll leave it over there.